Nerd Appropriate presents exclusive coverage of the BioWare base recorded live at PAX East 2013.
All right, welcome to the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. It's now Saturday morning. We are continuing to bring you all of the BioWare-based coverage from PAX East 2013, and we've got more today. So what are we starting Saturday off with, Ash?
Well, this is the rather zany version of the Dragon Age panel, and this is Dragon Age Thedas Unlocked. And this one was actually a lot of fun. I was actually sitting in on this one, and you can tell... By now, this is actually recorded on Sunday, and there's a little bit of fatigue setting in. It's day three of a huge convention. Everyone's kind of losing their mind. They've probably been up late, having a little bit of fun in Boston. And so it's a little loose. It's a little fun. Big head kart racing, Dragon Age style, is definitely discussed during this panel. And
called
this one
it.
Is... Yeah, yeah, we did. We did call that. But this one is awesome. There's a lot of laughs, some great, great questions from the audience, as always. And yeah, this one's just awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's very apropos that it's being released on Saturday. It's kind of like your Saturday morning cartoons. Mm-hmm. So to hear more from us, actually, where can people find us, Scott?
Yeah, you can, of course, you can find us on Twitter at NerdAppropriate. Email us at Ash, Matt, Hillary with one L, or myself, Scott, at nerdappropriate.com. And of course, there's a subscribe button on the page that you're visiting right now. If you click that, can tune in to the Rated Annie podcast, and you will also receive all of these BioWare panels as they are released into your podcast feed, which is super cool.
In stereo. Ooh.
In no, I don't know about that.
I mean, kind of like, it's like mono stereo.
Like, you know? Yeah.
Mono.
It's like mono stereo, if yeah. you would. Yeah.
Gee, way to spoil the illusion, guys.
Oh, no, wow. Man.
Sorry. I mean, it's filled 5. With magic.
5.1.
It is in 3D.
Yeah, totally.
It's just mono
so, 3D. Put on your 3D glasses and check out Dragon Age Thedas yeah. Unlocked.
This is the worst joke I've ever told.
I love it.
I loved it too.
Hello, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us here at the BioWare base. It's the final day of PAX, but we still got some awesome, exciting stuff going on here at BioWare base. Coming up right now, we've got the Dragon Age team. They're going to be talking about Dragon Age and how awesome it is. I'm going to turn it over to our community manager, Jessica Marizan, for introductions.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey.
Hey there.
Hello.
My name is Jessica Marizan. I lead the community team here at BioWare Edmonton and Montreal. This is one of our last panels of the day. How many of you have been to more than one panel this weekend? Freaking A, yeah. That's awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming. We love PAX. Any feedback that you have for us, talk to us off stage, and we will be happy to accommodate or, like, smile and nod and think maybe for the future. Anyway, we're here. This is the World of Thedas panel. I am joined by Mike, our creative director, Ben, one of our awesome editors, and Nick, an amazing concept artist on the Dragon Age team, to talk all about Dragon Age, everything going on. In the past two panels, we were joined by our friends at Dark Horse Comics, Nick and Dave. In their absence, I would still love to talk a little bit about the World of Thedas in sure. Encyclopedia Volume 1 coming out.
For sure.
First, I haven't asked, Index. Is it like a beautiful index system? Like, I kind of geek out over indexing.
Indexing is in... Like in the back.
Is there an index system in the
class? No.
Oh, yeah. That just means you guys have to work
yeah.
for it.
Like, there's a glossary. I was like, glossary, index, glossary.
Oh, so, yeah, I figured, there's a glossary.
I figured, you know, there's so many terms in this world that it'd be good to be able to quickly look them up. Whereas the book has so much, would have so much to index, I would have cried a lot if I had to do that.
Indexing
more than usual.
Yeah, more than usual. Excuse me.
Oh, Ben.
The book, though, it's divine. If I remember, mm-hmm. it's got the nice little like side marker, so you can go be like, okay, nation, religion.
Oh, excuse me? That is even better.
Well, what I figured was, you know, index, or I organized the book in a way that you don't need one, and that was what I was hoping for.
Look at you saving us all time.
So, yeah. Hopefully it's like logically organized. That was one thing I was really trying to do, is I actually was like going back to my university logic and categorization textbooks and being like, okay, how can I make this so that you open it and it makes sense as sort of a progression if you're new to the franchise. This is a book coming out on Dark Horse next month, by the way. It's a giant like encyclopedia to the world.
Mm-hmm. And so you both did a lot of work on it, Ben. Yep. You did the editing for it, and there's a lot of original written documentation in it, if not like completely original to the...
Yeah, I mean, it's basically completely written from the ground up, but the source material for most of it was our internal documentation of the lore, which I then remolded to be a fun read. And then I enlisted the help of pretty much our entire writing team to populate the corners of it with new in-world writing from a variety of in-world characters, including people like Jenna TV, possibly some followers that you guys know really well that we may not seen any writing from in the past, on topics that we haven't really covered that well in
like
the past.
Like Barf Spawn?
So. Yeah, he just put a paw. No. Uh-huh. That was a joke.
Barf Spawn.
Dogs can't really write that well, so.
I don't think you've ever met my dog.
You're smart.
Now, what about, it doesn't just go into the characters, it goes into, like, cultural differences. It really seems to span a lot of... In the past, we've seen a lot from Ferelden in Origins and Kirkwall in Dragon Age 2. And in some of our DLC, we, you know, explored things like Orlesian culture. But this really runs the gamut of all kinds of different cultures. Can you guys speak a little bit to that? And Nick, I would love to hear about, you know, curating the art for that and the different stylistic things that you put in.
Sure. So one cool thing about our art director is that he doesn't really... I apologize. I feel like I've said this like four times already this weekend. So if you've been to another one of our panels, I apologize if I sound like a broken record. but one thing that's really cool about our art director is that he's really adamant about the fact that we're not just building games. We are trying to build out a world. So whenever we've got time, he tries to get us to work on things that we haven't touched on in Thedas yet. So the result is we had like this enormous archive of concept art that has not seen the light of day in any of our games that we were able to use to illustrate all of Thedas. And this book is packed with hundreds of images, and many of them have never been seen before. So that's something I'm really excited about. So we'll be able to see more explanation and visual representations for like, things like Navara, Tevinter, Orlais, et cetera, it's very cool.
Do you guys have any particular like favorites, things that are in the book that aren't in the games, like stuff that's new? You don't have to spoil it too much, but like, you know, one thing I know has crept out there, I think from some of the pages that we leaked, like Tevinter's Noble's clothing, and I've seen people respond pretty positively to it.
Yeah,
and,
for me, it's definitely the fashion stuff. Like, getting sort of the delineation between all the different cultures has been a really important thing that we've been trying to do, and I think this book illustrates that. So, specifically, I love Ferelden, Orlesian, and Tevinter, like, noble outfits. Yeah, I think you guys would dig it. You guys are all Dragon Age fans, right? You'll like it.
One thing that amazed me when we were going through the art was just how different each nation looked.
Yeah.
How they each had sort of their own visual. The idea behind each nation, the things changed, you could tell.
Right.
Yeah. But I knew that for some of them already, but we got to look at more.
And, yeah. And then seeing them laid out that they actually pulled together went like, you know, the Fereldans look like they belong together, but they look distinctly different from the Orlesians. Like the Fereldans, who, you know, they would have like a wealthy class just like any other nation, but to see what they would use to adorn themselves, like furs and like beaten metals and leathers, rather than like gold and filigree and delicate stuff that the Orlesians might wear. Yeah.
So speaking of different kind of
overall scope of things. I want to ask you a quick lightning round question. Tell me about, not necessarily your favorite, but a type of creature in the Dragon Age universe that really stands out to you.
I love the Wyvern. It's in the DLC pack, the Felicia Day DLC pack. and it's because of the research that went into it. I wish I could show you all the sketches that went into that creature. It's amazing. And the concept artist that did that was working back and forth with the modeler to make sure that all the proportions were accurate so that this thing could actually move and feasibly exist, and then working with the animator to get it to behave the way he had imagined. So just the love that went into that creature. I just love the Wyvern. Yeah.
For me, it's the Nug. Yeah.
Love the Nug.
I have a friend who looks like him. I don't know.
Do you eat the Nug or
No, I'm a vegetarian. No, but
I get really upset when people try to eat them.
Yeah, me too.
Come on, yeah. Be friends.
They're so weird.
It's the little hands.
Yeah.
The little hands.
It'd be weird to have a one for a pet. I feel like it would poop everywhere, but that'd be cool.
It probably would, yes.
For me, I kind of dig on the Bronto, the big pack animal the dwarves use. You know, it looks, the coloration and everything is like rock camouflage. Like a lot of thought's gotten into that thing, but it's also just so ridiculously awesome. Especially that when we redid for Legacy, the pack Bronto and the armored Bronto. Like someone was like, you know, if I put some more metal on that thing, right? And it was just it was like, you know, this fearsome, you know, charging beast. And I thought that was really cool because it broadened them out beyond just like, oh, it's a thing that I kill. And you know, it's like, no, they built it for war, engineered for destruction, as they say.
How about you, Jess?
Mine, oh my gosh. This
was your question. I bring this up.
Okay, well, I like the little kind of... There are little bunnies and little tiny... Right? There are like little...
There are rabbits.
Yeah, those are my favorite.
The critters?
I just think that it's an attention to detail that makes me really happy to be in the game. They absolutely don't have to be in there, and yet they are. And it's just a nice little flavor, and... I can't kill them, so... I mean, can I kill them? Now I'm getting all upset. No, I can't. You guys protected me. Ben, you're getting upset.
I was worried that now this was going to be a cue for me to do the meow again, like, 2 days ago.
Do you want it now? I think you do. You got to do it. We're not continuing.
Wow. I need more water.
Donald Duck.
Give me more water. That's what that was a cat that... No longer is
water.
Alive. Then that like moment that hi.
It's Ben's first PAX. He's dealing with it.
And
okay.
You could probably chart the wow. I've lost my ability to meow.
Guys, you all have to leave
this
right now.
Like,
we need to deal with this.
This has never happened to me before, I swear.
You know, at a certain age, Ben, a man loses certain things. Next up, hair and ears.
I'll lose my hair in my ears?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope. Quite the opposite.
I'll tell you what, Ben, why don't we just move on and when you can just meow whenever you feel like it.
I'm going to be going back later to the hotel and over I'm going to practice until...
Into the mirror.
This is going...
Until the right side of your
phrasing.
Face.
Let's move on.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. So
Dragon Age.
Why don't we have an awkward segue? I also want to bring up Tor and our lovely range of novels. Mike, could you speak a little bit to that? Our latest one that came out is Asunder, obviously. Please read that if you are bored and waiting for Dragon Age stuff. Read Asunder.
You're subtle, like an Orlesian courtesan. The novels are awesome. I really like working with them, and we've been kind of blessed to have David Gator. You guys probably have heard the name. Dave's awesome. He's a great writer, and you know, when the opportunity to write Stolen Throne came up, he kind of jumped on it. turned out to be a pretty darn competent novelist, right? You know, good characterization. And it succeeded at something that I think is kind of cool, is when your novels are not mandatory reading. They aren't like, sorry, I'm getting feedback there. They aren't required for you to have to understand that, you know, okay, Loghain is a guy, and you understand, you know, there's more than enough covered in the game. But when you read Stolen Throne, you understand he's a guy with some layers, right? Mm-hmm. Like he's an onion and or parfait. Or an ogre. So then he, you know, by doing that, well, I think perhaps unconsciously, but I think Dave set a bit of a trend in that the novels are additive to the franchise. They give us new stuff to explore, and they let us, you know, kind of go out beyond and either provide some backstory or provide some stuff that you know, some foreshadowing. Oink. and it kind of helped deal with things. So the order, they kind of exist in a kind of a neat order. You know, Stolen Throne and The Calling both happen before Origins, and then after Origins you have Asunder taking place. And we work with our editors at Tor, and Stacey Hills, our the kind of the brand editor, and she, you know, works with us and works with writers. If we're going to go external, you know, we have some neat processes as well for kind of laying out, like, I tend to feel a writer needs to have some buy-in, so we'll try to give them some options. Like, well, we could explore this or this. These are both viable things for us to do. We'd like to cover them in some media somewhere. So we did something very similar with Dawn of the Seeker, the animated series. I know Dave actually pitched some ideas for me because he was like, I don't know which to do. And I was like, okay, well, let me read them. And for the comics. And it's kind of just kind of our core creative process for that.
And we've got another comic coming up next month, right?
We do. We do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've been going on comics.
Yep.
Take us home.
So the comics follow Alistair and Isabella and Beric as Alistair tries to find out more about what happened to his father, King Merrick. We've had two series so far. We had Silent Grove and Those Who Speak, and it's wrapping up starting, I believe, next month, if I'm not mistaken. I wish the Dark Horse guys could verify that, but I'm pretty sure it starts next month. It's the last in the series. It's called Until We Sleep. So,
one thing that I like about all these different telling stories in all these different mediums in the world is I think it shows the depth of Thedas, because, I mean, it's like I used the term sandbox before, but, you know, it's such a deep world, and not all the stories to tell in that world work best in a game. Yeah. Some are more suited for a novel. They're maybe not as heavy on, you know, well, I guess there's not very much gameplay in novels. But yeah. Well, it depends, though.
That's, you know, true, you could,
yeah, exactly. Oh. Anyway.
But, I mean, a lot of our story partners, every mm-hmm. single, you know, editor or brand manager that I've met at, like, Dark Horse and Tor, they're legitimate fans of the series. Like, they know their stuff. You can have, like, geeky, like, lore conversations with them, and I think that's incredible. You don't see that with a lot of, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We've been able to cultivate, I think, relationships where we've been trying not to force it, if that makes sense. You know, it's not like people are just, you know, always coming to us and going, we want to do everything with you, but at times we'll be, we have a pretty good biz dev team. You know, a couple guys, Richard Awani, Chris Bain, and Robert, that all, they go to trade shows, they'll talk to potential partners, people who, you know, Treehouse, they carry a lot of those licensed goods and, everything in that box. And what they do is they tend to basically approach it from a, well, Mass Effect and Dragon Age are important, and if you would like in on this, we can talk. As opposed to, please make crap merchandise for us to validate us, right? No one wants to be there, because what you get is you get whatever they are. You know, well, we had some leftover faux leather, so you get some wallets, you know. And that isn't the right approach, right? That's not how you kind of respect and curate, you know, something that you've worked on. And it's become increasingly clear to me over the past few years that you know, there was a moment, I think, where DA was on the cusp of just kind of going out of control, right? And, you know, Origins had just wrapped. And when I kind of looked at it and went, okay, so how are we doing on documentation? And the answer was poorly, very poorly, right? There were concepts scattered all over the place, and you've done a lot of work. Ben's done a ton of work on the IP. And being able to have something that essentially respects itself means that when your partners approach it, you go, oh, okay, you'd like to know about the world. And they respect that, right? Because Lucas does the exact same thing with Star Wars, right? And sometimes midichlorian sneaks through. But you talk to the Lucas guys. They have like a department that basically tries to keep their 10,000 ancillary products and Lego pieces all kind of in line. And I'm not going to go that crazy. I want people to be able to explore, but I do think you gotta be careful. And if you respect yourself, then other people respect you. And that I think has paid off as a philosophy.
Absolutely. So let's talk about an internal partner of ours, the amazing folks at DICE and the new Frostbite engine. I know we really can't give spoilers for, and you know, we don't want to be a tease. Like, that sucks, but we will tease sometimes. Anyway, let's talk about Frostbite a bit. What can you say, Mike?
Sure. It's a really, really cool piece of tech. And I've had some questions online, a couple here actually more recently. I think there might be, well, okay. Is anybody here worried that working with a shooter engine is going to be bad?
Nope. Be honest.
No, it's cool. All right. Cool. Yeah, good. So that's because you are savvy tech people who come to places like PAX. Good job.
But for your friends who might be.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's really cool. An engine is fundamentally a piece of tech that renders things, right? It puts pretty things on your screen. And pretty things
such
are awesome.
Pretty things.
And this one is particularly good at pretty things. What I will say is that it has not particularly been good at, say, winged quadrupeds with tails. It has not a lot of experience with swords. And they had a system for doing like
there's something yeah. Hello.
Following us now?
I don't know.
Are you unscrewing things?
No, it just unscrewed itself.
Do we need to give you something to keep your hands busy?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Frostbite. Sorry, we're getting punchy. So Frostbite delivers some awesome stuff, and the thing I have said this before, so I apologize if I'm repeating, but we've had some really cool opportunities to work with the guys in Stockholm, where they have an amazing engineering team, and to actually send them a lot of tech that kind of fits our specialty back. Conversation systems, cutscenes, melee combat, the timing between hits and reactions, sinks, and other kind of stuff that they really don't have to deal with as much because bullets tend to autocorrect due to distance travel. They've been able to integrate a lot of our stuff back into their mainline. So essentially, it's kind of like a growing library of resources that this engine can do. If you want to do cutscenes with like face capture, it can do that, but if you want to do cutscenes where it's more procedurally generated because it's really hard to capture a dwarf with Varric's jaw as a hyper-realistic photo guy because they don't exist, then we're going to need you to dress up like a one of those Darkspawn that could talk. Let's do that. So what we end up doing is getting so we can do more procedural stuff, and now the engine actually supports both, so it's getting more robust. And for us, this is a nice like barter system. It's like, maybe you could help us with some water stuff, and we'll maybe give you talking. which is cool. I mean, that kind of reduces the effort, but that is what we're looking at. It's the end result, I think. God, I wish I had a screenshot for you, but in time, I hope you will be very impressed. I'm not going to make promises. What I'm going to say is that when we do reveal this game and we show it to you, I believe it will blow your socks off. And if it does not, I would like to hear why. And my hope is by the time we reveal it, there's going to be some time to adjust if there's something that, is universally a point of concern. So.
Sounds good. I don't even own socks anymore. They've been blown off too many times. I just stopped buying them.
Also, you live in LA.
Also, I live in LA, so socks are, whatever. Speaking of beautiful, if you guys aren't aware, Nick is... In Dragon Age 2, you might remember the incredible load screens, the just really beautiful story frescoes. That's Nick. That's Nick. Among, like, a lot of other things. He's got a really great range. So, speaking of beautiful, can you tell us about maybe a really memorable or impactful environment or kind of vista from either Origins or Dragon Age 2?
Temple of Sacred Ashes, just sticks out, just because of the, I don't know, it's kind of this sort of sanctimonious, that's probably the wrong word.
Yeah.
Somber, so just saying somber about it, I guess. It sticks out. It's a memorable spot for me.
Yeah, it's a really great combination of, like, environmental nature,
And then the
man
architecture
and nature. Just,
it felt cold. Like, it felt cold walking into it. You really got the sense of temperature and the sense of grandeur. So, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Do you guys have any? Or I have more questions for you.
Ooh, more questions.
Tell me about your go-to party.
Go-to party?
Yeah. Like, who do you bring on your questing or on your big adventures?
See, because you didn't state a game, now I want to do, like, my fantasy party.
Do it!
Like, between all of them.
Sure.
Because I think that would be fun now.
Sure. We're fantasy football style. I'm, like, who's in your party?
So I can't break rules like a win, win, and win, right?
No.
And then act out like
it gets a little
girls.
That gets a little sci-fi.
That would be fun. Golden Girls and Dragons. Yeah. Because I love Wynn.
Which Wynn is Blanche? The one on the left, obviously.
So I was thinking the one in.
Can we hear your party,
book,
please?
A book.
Can we hear your party?
A certain book.
I want to hear your party.
Okay.
Please.
Well, Varric, obviously.
Obviously.
I adore Varric. And you know what? If we were in the real world, I would take Varric with me everywhere. We'd be hanging out. And Meryl. And this is purely because I love Meryl. If I didn't love Meryl, then I would be taking Anders instead. And then Wynn. So basically, two mages. Three mages if Varric, if not for Varric. So I like mages. They're friends.
You and like mages and Varric. Who,
yeah.
Yeah. Who is like a combination of several of our writers. I see a lot of Varric in the writing pit.
Because see, the thing is, I've learned, basically working with the writers, just the process of building these characters, and I get really attached to them. I really like them as... I feel like they're fully fleshed out, real people. They do such a good job with them. And sometimes at first I was going to think, like, oh, how would I do this strategy-wise? Like, I need a certain mage, I need a rogue, I need a warrior, the tank. But then I'm like, you know what, no, I just like hanging out with these certain characters and bringing them along, seeing what they have to say. And I think that's why I'm so happy to be where I am, because I get to dig deep with these characters and help build them. So.
You know, I think what a lot of people aren't aware of is that as the editing team, you're not just fixing grammar, and you guys are the voice of, you make sure that these are on the mark, because there's so many different writers doing different aspects. You guys have to be the ones who are like, no, that's not how that person would sound, or can you talk a little bit about, you know, being the keeper of the keys for that?
Well, we have a lot of writers writing one game, and writers will own characters, but they're all writing the PC, for instance. And so then these parts of the game written by different writers will all come to the editing team, and we basically smooth the edges. I think I heard someone say back in the day that one of my fellow editors is Shepherd, basically, because she went in and she went over every Shepherd line and made sure that Shepherd was the same Shepherd no matter which writer had written Shepherd. Another fun part of our job is we get to be like brick walls, basically, for bouncing ideas off of and see where things land. I have many fond and long text messages from Cheryl, for instance, at 2 a.m. panicking, asking about certain characters, and like, should I do this or should I do this? I can't. And just talking stuff out, that can be really fun and rewarding. And I think having that sort of collaboration process only strengthens the final result. So
your party choice is a big decision for you.
Yeah.
You're invested.
Well, it's who I want to hang out with for a long, long time, because our games are really long. So
they are long. They are long. So you don't switch it up, you just go to?
Yeah. Well, I would, in DA2, I would take Anders, and then... And then I couldn't take Anders after a certain point.
Like, so, why did you do that, guy?
Yeah, the party just got awkward.
Very awkward.
Oh, okay. freaking Anders. Yeah. Let's move on. Let's move on. I have feelings. So, Mike, when I think of strategy, I kind of think of you a little bit. I think combat, I think strategy, you are a very logical, but also kind of a like a kick-ass, guns-blazing kind of guy at the same time, playing chess with a gun. I don't know, or a sword, or a shield, or why don't you tell me what you, as your kind of go-to, if this wasn't something where you had to pick all of them and make sure they're all balanced, and that if you're just playing on your retail kit at home,
okay,
Dragon Age Origins or 2, or both, what is kind of your spec that you play?
Oh, okay, so kind of the character I go to or, yeah, or attempt to play. A rogue bow using assassin is kind of the one I like, because they're, you know, I especially like the way in 2 we added like a lot of the kickback, and you know, if just a regular guy was running at you, you could kind of slow him down because he'd keep, you know, looking like you were shotgunning him. That made me feel good. but with the assassin spec, you're able to stack a lot of effects like Mark of Death and stuff that essentially leaves a single target wide open. Mm-hmm. And when I think about the strategic value of that, you know, and this is something we're putting a lot of emphasis on is a lot more enemy roll stuff in combat, so that they're, you know, you want to be picking and choosing specific enemies so that they're priority targets based on your strategy, and that each party should actually tackle different things and different encounters differently. So that'll be nice if we get there. But in that case, so that's the character that essentially, if the enemy mage is going to be a powerhouse, like say you had one of the Cerebos from the Canary or something that was going to drop all that lightning on your head, that was the character that basically was like, you, blam! And that to me is immensely satisfying, because they're like the scalpel, right? And they don't need to get close, there's not a lot of lag on their action, and they're able to get in quickly and kind of decisively deal with like one weaker foe that probably is capable of wreaking a lot of damage. So in my ideal scenario, that's kind of the character I'm playing, because I like to give that a lot of attention, and then the others I can kind of quickly, you know, okay, you go over here, you position here, you defend this. And by eliminating that high level threat, I kind of bring down the randomness in the fight, and I think that means you can proceed with a little more strategy from there on out.
Absolutely.
Can I answer their questions?
I mean, no, but yes, of course you can.
Thank you.
Please do.
Chains of Kirkwall, the big chains coming out of those weeping slave statues, the enormous ones for visuals.
Yes.
So I don't know if you guys have seen the litho, but Matt Rhodes did one that's just like, it's that, and it's Stormlash, and there's boats looking incredibly tiny.
They're so little.
Yeah, and that thing geeks me out. I've desperately wanted to like run along those things and like fight guys on them for several moons now, but We didn't get to do that expansion pack, so maybe not.
Do you ever look at that and think, like, holy crap, I know someone didn't make that, but, like, who, like, some really, really, really poor labor laws govern the making of those things.
Yeah, that's probably that lots of people so died. Well. Yeah.
That is Kirkwall. So.
But the survivors poor labor were stronger. Laws. The Deventer are dinks, is the short version.
I like Deventer.
Well, that's... Then... We should talk later. Because seriously, there's some hard truths you need to hear. And party-wise, man, oh man. So if you're doing all fancy football, this is why I really wanted to do this.
Okay.
Yeah. Because seriously, I need Isabella in a party with Morrigan.
That would be fun.
And to take the goddamn wind out of their sails, I want Sigrun there. Hello. I'm in the Legion of the Dead. What's up? And because really, she's got kind of the bad deal of those two, and they're all like, you know, being what they are. And yeah, that would be absolutely fine. And then put that with, say, a female rogue bow archer in there. I've actually got a functional party. We're good to go.
Oh, man.
Yeah, not a lot of tanking, but it's cool.
Banter.
The banter would be astonishing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yep.
Now I'm rethinking my answer.
Well, when we do our big head kart racing and or fighting game based on Dragon Age, we can get that in.
KO'd.
Oh, man. So Sten would be like Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he'd turn.
Like heavy, hardcore. He'd be like heavy, and you can like run.
Yes.
Meryl off the road.
Yes.
Oh, man.
No, I love Meryl.
I know.
She would absolutely like fall into the ravine immediately.
Yeah. Okay, lightning round question for you. In the big head kart racing game, what is the blue shell?
the blue shell, I mean, obviously some kind of, I would think of fire spell.
Oh, not bad.
I would think of fire spell.
I think just like a nug on its back. Like,
kind of like lying on like a round disc doing this.
Just like a dwarf throwing a nug.
Okay, good. That's game design, everyone.
Oh, that's an amazing panel for lit. Like, design a game in an hour. Oh, yeah. Man. Okay, I'm thinking next PAX. That's,
oh, man.
All right,
so
all right.
There's so many places you can race, too.
I know.
Like, oh, my God.
Oh, along through the streets of Orlais.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Or Valrhea, specifically. Yeah. When I, or,
anyway.
I want to open up to questions, but first, I would like to have one last question. If you were a character in the world of Thedas, where would you live, and what race would you be? I mean, you can tell me, you can go like super deep and tell me your profession and your whatever you want, but
awesome.
I have to know race and where you're living.
Okay, human in Ferelden, and I'd be a professional hiker. I fell in love with the mountains when I moved to Alberta, and yeah, Ferelden is so relatable for me, and I want to hike around Ferelden with a backpack and whatever the Thedasian version of Birkenstocks and wool socks and yeah, that Ferelden.
When though, because there are certain times in the timeline when you probably don't want to do a lot of hiking.
I'd be a sneaky hiker.
So
you're a rogue then.
Yeah. Okay. So darkspawn, it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Just gotta wear a bell.
Yeah. Wear a bell. Yeah. Some darkspawn spray.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And hang your food high in the tree.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Blight be gone.
For me, it would be the Anderfels.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I don't know what that says about me, but, and I would be a lonely sculptor, like just sculpting sad things and then selling them to dwarven merchants who would then, take them south and sell them for way more money than I get to like Orlesian nobles. And then I would like, just like be, ugh, the whole time. I just formed like a whole like narrative.
You don't really get escapism, do you?
Mike?
Torn. I think the answer I'm going to settle on, because I thought of like a bunch, is the surly dwarven kind of like housekeeping kind of lead. The guy that has to coordinate the cleanup activities at the Blooming Rose in Kirkwall. I mean, just imagine, right? You kind of just open the door and you're like, you out! Come on, mops! Right? Like, it just... like you, that would be a sitcom, you know? Serendipity just kind of like coming in. Hey! It's like, what's up, girl? Let's do this. Yeah, it just... Seriously, the thing writes itself and probably would read like it wrote itself. So...
You guys have just like put yourselves into the game.
Yeah.
It could be anyone, but you'd basically be kind of yourself, but not yourself in the game.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah. Mops.
I should have said human, and not because I'd want to be human, but because I'd have to have a whole nother aspect to figure out elf or dwarf.
So. That just gets confusing.
Yeah, I know. Like it's, you know, it's lonely enough.
And frankly, no one exports elven art, so.
Yeah. Well, who would want that?
No.
Wow. Well, I've learned a lot about you guys today. It's weird. Ben can't meow anymore.
No, this is serious, people. This is serious.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think it's time to open it up for some questions. I don't know where my mic is.
Hi.
Hey, my mic. Mike, I'm going to stick my hand
Mike's
into
right
this
here,
curtain,
though.
Yeah,
that's a really bad part.
Okay, you go. Can you yell?
Yeah.
You got your hand. No, you. Yeah, you got your hand up really fast. Go. Oh yeah, so the easy one, super easy, is you know, we had kind of like as one of our test reels, we had people doing kind of just straight up dances, right? And you know, like because that really tests the mocap and the capture fidelity and stuff like that. And I remember, you know, it was what 14 seconds or so after the data came back, and someone had mopped it to the ogre. So he had the ogre kind of like break hands in, and it was like, you know, I'm having trouble taking him seriously, but I love this. There's that, and the other I think the fun thing, this one's I don't know how hilarious it is, but it's an interesting insight into mocap, is that because we do a lot of stuff like, okay, you know, you get hit by the wing of a dragon and go sailing backwards or whatever, they kind of have these like weights that they carry around that are like these big kind of dumbbell things that they're padded, but they'll kind of like, they'll get a mocap actor in like a harness with a rope or whatever and a team of guys, and they'll like, you know, hit him with the weight so he kind of has the impact, you know, it's all soft, but at least it's there and he can act more realistically, and then the guys go, "Hurr!" and just like heave him back, right, as if he's, you know, Jesus. As if that happened. And so so the end result is you get some really, like, when you see the guys, because it's, you know, it's dudes in like a skin tight suit, so which is never a really comfortable image. Man, you know, glowing with little balls on them, and you see the team of guys that are just like kinda waiting for the cue, man. And yeah, it's pretty spectacular kind of moment. And you only get that when you have winged quadrupeds.
That mocap suit is really like, I've
oh, the Mosvin suit? Yeah.
As they set it up and get it prepared, it looks like it would fit like a 3-year-old.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, like, one last one. Yeah. We do have an in-house one, which is kind of a new thing, and that's kind of cool. But our lead cinematic designer, when he was trying to figure it out and test it out, is that we hadn't really built a space for it yet, and it uses Bluetooth, I think. And it's really cool. Like, it's kind of almost like accelerometer-based, so it doesn't require like a studio. And it's not as high fidelity as the really good stuff at EAC, but when he was trying to find it, he took it home one night and was futzing with it or whatever, I think just to set up the initial stuff, and like it was crystal clear. So for a period of about a month, he'd be taking like his team over to his basement, and they'd strap into this too tight clothing, and it's just like, so how's that going, JP? Could you document that so HR doesn't complain, please? Because yeah, it's like, open my basement, we're going to capture some movies. And yeah, so yeah, honestly, you put people in way too tight clothing, hilarity ensues.
Your next sitcom after your weird
Serendipity's in that one too.
Yeah, okay, all right, next question.
The origin of the word Thedas, does it stand for the Dragon Age setting?
Yep.
Good question.
I will expand briefly on that. David Gaynor, I think quite wisely, has what he calls the rule of naming, which is that all names kind of suck on first conception, right? You know, it's like iPhone. Right, there's no I on this thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that you're like, but after a period of time, our brains, because this is how we learn, accept words for things that we all share as a common language for how we identify iPhone. Also, awesome case. But the neat thing is that when you start to name something, there is kind of a window in which if it has to change, you have to do it quickly, otherwise it sticks, and suddenly you're now dealing with this like indeterminate name where half the team's calling it Bob, half the team's calling it Frank. So with Thedas, what happened was is that we would just acronym it out to the Dragon Age setting and Thedas, as it were, in often typos. And we'd kind of Thedas it, and Thedas eventually mashed into Thedas, and so it became the Dragon Age setting. You know, at times I'm uncomfortable telling that story because it sounds like it's just like an El Cheapo thing, but the problem was is that it wasn't that. It was over a course of years, it kind of morphed into a word that became real for us, and hopefully it doesn't cheapen it for you guys. I think it's still a perfectly fine word. And Ferelden doesn't come under that fire, thank God, because I don't know what we'd be acronyming there. So there you go. That's how it happens, and it happens really naturally. If we find that with characters, we always kind of put a 1-week moratorium before I'm allowed to go in and go, I hate it, right? Like, because it might grow on you, or at least, okay, I can see, you know, and that's how it always happens.
I should, this is just a weird segue thing, but with the book, when we were working on it, like, I, at first, when we were talking about it, there were different ways we could present the lore, and one of them could have been to go the other way and talk about stuff like this, right? And to be basically take you out of the game and out of the world and have some of the trivia stuff like that, but we decided to go the direct opposite way and have nothing that has any comparison, like direct comparison to anything in the world, so that it would be like you'd pick up this book at a library somewhere in like Denerim, and and it would fit right in. So,
yeah, it's like someone has collated writings from the world, not.
But that's super cool. Yeah. I didn't know that, the Thetis thing.
Yeah,
I didn't
know.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool. All right.
Okay, so yesterday at the Mass Effect Retrospective, we heard a little bit about statistics, about how people play the game. Do you guys know any statistics or trends about how people play Dragon Age?
Yeah, actually. I can come up with a few just off the top of my head. I didn't prepare any slides, so I apologize. So we did see a preponderance of humans. You certainly see more humans. It basically stacks human to elf to dwarf. Dwarf is a... I guess fittingly small but loud contingent of people that love those. You did tend to see a leaning towards warrior as well, over mage and rogue. I think rogue was the lowest, but mage and rogue were very, very close in timing. Other things that we see, these are just, so at this point I don't have numbers, but we do see a tendency that people tend to stick with the first party they find. So we're always very cognizant of that, but Alistair and Morgan are very, very high attach rates, to use like a marketing term, in large part because the first mage and the first warrior you get, you have the most control over their character builds, you've kind of gotten used to their abilities. And something that we get increasingly cognizant of is that a character that comes in later in the game, like Ogryn, tends to be lower attach, and partly because he's daunting. When you get him, he may have abilities you haven't prepared for. You don't know his armor. Yes, he's a warrior, so he's not weird, but he's weird. But because he's new, and you're like, a new complicated thing is like what that kind of does, like introducing a character that's supposed to be major that late in the game. Really hurts people's ability to deal with them, and you don't hear as many stories about Ogryn and stuff, which I think may be partly why you got a second kick at the can in Awakening.
I remember going looking at those numbers, and I wasn't really surprised by this at all, but I remember Varric being like, everybody takes Varric.
Yeah,
like,
everybody takes Varric. But I think we can all understand why.
Yeah. It's definitely, yes, exactly.
Next question?
I got one right here.
Oh, Priestley.
All right, so going back to you guys being put into the world, this is specifically for Ben. Who would you have as your voice actor, and would you have him practice the meow?
Who would I have as my voice actor? That is a fun question. Oh, man, I really want to say Gilbert Gottfried.
I'm a sad... Scalp down!
Yeah. Oh, this would explain why nobody...
That's why nobody's hanging out with him.
Yeah.
It's all coming together.
But then, okay. So then I would... Yeah, there's my voice actor. And I'd probably... Yeah. And that would also sort of... What I would do then is work that in. And then he would have this, like, image that would go out with the sculptures that would make him seem like he's not like that at all, you know? Can we, like, have every actor in our games from now on be Gilbert Gottfried?
I will consider that.
That is going to make for some awesome romance dialogue.
Yeah. Unfortunately, after consideration, no. Okay. No, we cannot do that.
But I'm sorry, I want to hear your voice actors.
I would get Ben Jelena.
Now I was going to try and do an impression of you. No, that's wow, we were joking about how I've turned into a jerk in Boston, and that was a really jerky.
Boston Ben is very different from Edmonton Ben.
Yeah, he drew Boston Ben in his sketchbook, and it's just me with a goatee, like an evil goatee. Who would be yours?
I don't know. So the writers tell me... The writers tell me my voice was in their head when they were writing Varric first, and I'm inordinately proud of that because that's fucking awesome. So I'm gonna go with Brian Bloom, so we can get him in there, right? Let's complete the cycle. That's it. Other than that, Sydney Poitier.
That's awesome. Good question. Next.
Yeah, I like how this is kind of turning into, like, the end of PAX panel, like, very clearly. Yeah. It's like a little bit of dating game.
Mike, which one of our bachelorettes are you the most interested in?
Hi, Mike.
Okay. Not even not Boston Ben. He's nope. Trouble.
Okay, so Boston this is a little less dating game, but so one of the things that I think is so compelling about Dragon Age 2 is that the narrative is kind of non-traditional. It's not sort of a typical hero's journey with a good guy defeats the bad guy and then everything's okay. With the long time span, there's a lot of moral ambiguity. So I'm just wondering what sort of went into the decision to make a game with an unusual narrative like that, and if there was any question about how people would respond to that kind of a narrative in a game.
Well, I think there were a number of factors. That's a really good question. I'm going to think you guys are aware that we took a little less time with DA2 than we took with Origins, yes? Some people have mentioned that to me. And so, knowing we were going to go in for a shorter cycle, one of the first things that kind of leapt to my mind was okay, is there a way we could do this story, especially with Matt Goldman coming in and kind of, you know, changing the art direction? And if you guys haven't heard my art direction rant in one of the previous panels, maybe we should go there. But, Matt wanted to retool elements of the art direction to get some more distinct looks and that kind of stuff. So we knew there'd be a fair amount of rework involved on the art team, right? The concept guys started like day one and they were on fire. And I was asking myself, like, is there a way that we could acknowledge that we probably won't have the spread of levels and stuff that we're going to have, which, you know, hence the cave. And I apologize again. But to me, trying to set a story over the idea of time, you know, like looking at titles like Eternal Darkness as a possible reference point, right? You know, one where it's kind of much of the game is in that mansion or in the chthonic depths under that mansion, right? And that to me was super powerful and effective. And I thought there was definitely an opportunity to do that there, and it would let us explore some stuff we'd never done before, like what if your relationships evolved over like a decade instead of, well, I guess in game time it was 7 years, and the cast is at the end of the decade. So what would that be like, and would that open up some interesting opportunities? And we found it did, right, obviously, and I'm not sure we executed on it perfectly. In fact, I'm sure we didn't do it perfectly. But that was a big part of that. And then, of course, you know, okay, so the game's covering time. How do we get between chunks of time? Because we obviously can't render 10 full years. And that's where the idea of a story, of an interrogation, of someone kind of telling the tale of how this guy got here, because it was kind of essentially getting to the good bits, right? You know, so, okay, these were the important informative moments, you know, like reading someone's really well-written biography or Hard in Hightown. And so the end result then is that we kind of coalesced on what if someone who were close to your character were being questioned about your character, and we could have that be our propelling argument. And it was something that just seemed to gel out of the needs we had for the project and wanting to, yeah, we did want to do a story that was a little bit different. I think there's absolute merit to the kind of save the world story and that kind of stuff, but we needed to kind of, we'd been on Origins for a long time. We wanted to dust ourselves off a little bit. So we tackled that something new, and it seemed to fit with what we had to do in terms of certain art constraints and stuff too. So the end result, I'm pretty damn happy with how it happened. I think that it may have skiffed off a couple of things that we could have gone deeper on, but I like what it did, and I think it did some neat stuff. I don't know if we'll go immediately back to that again, because I think I'd like to keep exploring, but I think there were some huge lessons for the team as a result. So there you go. That's kind of the genesis of Varric as storyteller.
One thing that I liked about Varric as storyteller is that it was his perspective, you know, and in digging through the lore, Thetis is all about perspectives and how each individual character sees the world. The world of Thetis is not, this is how it is. I think religion reflects this really well. I mean, the Chantry is the dominant religion in most of Thetis, but that forms the worldview for a section of the people there. For other people, what is truth in this in the world we've created is different for different people. And I thought Varric reflected that very well.
Yeah, and that's totally a conscious decision. Like, even from the very beginning days, is that you know, one of the things we wanted to do was to have a world where there is, you know, a god, the maker, you know. But unlike your standard fantasy, your Forgotten Realms or whatever, which I think, you know, obviously it is so successful, it's become a standard. Is that in there? It's kind of like religion doesn't require faith because the gods literally show up and go, hey, man, and heal you and take off again, right? Yeah. Or their priests do, or whatever. It's like, so there's no faith. I don't have to wonder if Tyr exists because a giant hammer comes down from the sky. And I go, okay, cool. Thanks, dude. So in our case, we did want to do one where it required faith, right? And I mean, so faith and perspective are really just two absolute tenets of the frame. I mean, look at the very, very, very first thing you hear in Dragon Age. It's the Chantry teaches us that. It's not the Darkspawn are, right? And that, it's everywhere. It's permeated all over the place. So we basically are consciously making this decision to not lock it down so that there's still room to explore and discover. And so that when you guys have discussions, is this right, is this right, that those are valid discussions, because I'd like to think that people in Thedas would have those discussions. Well, are the Templars right? Are the Mages right? That kind of question.
And then you see that in real life too, right?
So indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So there you go. There you go. That was our philosophy moment for the day.
Yeah, awesome. I like have follow-up questions, but we don't have time for me to ask them all. So dinner. We have time for one last question.
Primarily game on the PC, and so I obviously played Dragon Age Awakening and the Origin, all of them on the PC. I'm just curious how it makes you guys feel with people that make substantial mods to the game when they play it on the PC, because it's not something that people that play on Xbox, for example, might be able to do.
Well, I think it's kind of a bummer that we haven't yet found a way to do kind of a modding community that can extend games on, you know, on consoles. There are absolutely valid reasons for that, right? Consoles are, they're a lot tighter in terms of their submission guidelines and that kind of stuff. So I get it. I dig it. It is what it is. I think it's a choice that Microsoft and Sony have fundamentally made. So mods, I mean, you know, the tool set and Origins, you know, it's. I'll be frank with you guys. It's not going to be very easy to do mods just because of the fundamental architecture of Frostbite. We're poking to see if there's something possible, or at least to make it as easy as possible. But I don't know we're going to get to toolset territory. But with that in mind, when I see, you know, I go on to Dragon Age Nexus or something, and I see people have taken my game and like it enough that our effort is something they want to improve upon. And, I mean, I won't say they all improve upon, because there are times where I'm like, oh, dear. But here's the thing. It's improved upon for them, right? They like the result. That people who've installed it, it's democratized. People who like the result can install it, and I think that's cool, because, you know, gaming is, it should be a collaborative and shared medium, right? I mean, it's the same reason we look for fan feedback, right? We don't just sit here and auteur Crystal Towers and go, no, this is what you will play. You know, except on Tuesdays. And so with that in mind, it's like that's cool. And then if it does anything to help get new people interested in the industry, a very young industry that I think benefits from fresh ideas more than any other, because they can be implemented and prototyped, and that the you know, you get a team excited and behind it, it's awesome. Then I think that is an incredible value. And any modding community, anytime people can get together and discuss a thing they like because they're sharing techniques for making it better or better, is an amazing thing. And so I can't spend too much time digging into them, because you run into weird waters where people are like, no, that was my mod and you stole it. It's like, well, we have ideas independently. But I do love that it's happening. I love that it continues to happen, that people went into 2 and went, oh, this is the same file format. It's cool. Let's do new skins and stuff. And so I think it's kind of awesome. Does that answer your question in a roundabout way? Okay, cool. Nick, you're an artist. Does it bug you?
Not at all. I don't know. Kind of goes back to like the whole point of Bioware games in the first place. Like, you are crafting your own world, right? And you're making these decisions. So in a way, it's your Thedas, and I like that notion. But same with Mike. I don't spend a lot of time looking through the mods. None at all, quite frankly. And it's the same reason. It's just worry that coincidentally we end up with the same thing. And then someone's like, I accuse you. And
yeah,
I don't want
to accuse. But you know, it's funny when you think about it. We kind of build mods into our own game. Like, you know, we finally modded a female protagonist in, right? Like, remember that story that hit about, what was it? Not Zelda. It was, well, no, someone did Zelda, but someone else did Donkey Kong, I think. and you know, made it so it was a female lead. And I'm like, cool, we've done that too. Excellent. And so that's like a mod, right? When you think about it, it's like, cool, I've swapped the gender, except we've just built it into the game for you. So, it's, you know, enjoy that.
And it's different than mods, but I know the all of the writer's room, it's super fun to go through fan art too.
Fan art's awesome.
We love fan art.
Fan art is fantastic.
I think that's a kind of awesome place to end the panel. Like, cool.
Thank you,
make
guys.
Stuff.
Thank you.
Make stuff. Thank you, guys. We dig it.
I'm so glad the stage didn't fall down.
Yeah, we dig it. All right.
So that's it from the BioWare base, but we here at Nerd Appropriate would like to thank BioWare for allowing us to bring this content to you guys. And if you are new to this site, Ash, why don't you give them a little rundown of who we are and what we've been up to.
So we are nerdappropriate.com, and we do a podcast by the name of Rated NA. And we're actually coming up on our big 100th episode. So we've been doing this for about 2.5 years. Do not listen to the early episodes, please. they get better. They age like a fine wine or cheese.
You should absolutely take a look through our archives of different podcasts where we've had some amazing special guests from the BioWare universe. People like Patrick Weeks, David Gator, Mike Gamble, Allie Hillis, Courtney Taylor, Jennifer Hale. It doesn't get any better than that. So we're super honored to have such amazing special guests and, of course, to BioWare, as always.
Absolutely. And that's not all. If you've been listening to these podcasts, you've probably heard our theme song that starts and ends every podcast. And that theme song was composed by Jimmy Henson, who was one of the composers on Mass Effect 2. Definitely visit his Bandcamp, Big Giant Circles. Check out his website. Plenty more Mass Effect music and other cool tunes on Big Giant Circles.
So thanks for listening. And of course, if you are digging this content, follow us at Nerd Appropriate or follow BioWare and let them know that you're digging the stuff that we're putting out. And as always, subscribe to the podcast and you can keep getting these wonderful little nuggets of joy in your podcast feeds. So thank you guys so much. Till next time.
See you. Bye.
Thanks, guys.